D. James Kennedy Ministries presents Truths That Transform.
Let us answer the question, does the Bible teach socialism?
People's capacity for self-support has declined dramatically because these government programs destroy the heart of self-sufficiency.
This is Truths That Transform.
Thank you for joining us on Truths That Transform, a viewer-supported program of D. James Kennedy Ministries. I'm Frank Wright. Be sure to visit our ministry website where you can find a wide variety of outstanding free content, including video, audio, and print resources. It's all available at djameskennedy.org. This month on Truths That Transform, we're looking at socialism. For the first time ever, a self-avowed socialist has won delegates for a major party's nomination for president. Many Americans clearly do not understand the danger. Joining us to talk about socialism is William J. Murray, chairman of the Religious Freedom Coalition. He's the son of the late atheist firebrand Madeline Murray O'Hare and has written a new book about socialism, Utopian Road to Hell. Well, Bill, thanks for joining us today. It's great to have you with us.
Great. Good to be on with you.
Well, you have an academic background and studied socialism. You've got historical interests, a wide breadth of knowledge about it. But your book is really about your personal journey, the personal effect of socialism on you.
The very beginning of the book, in order to introduce why I'm so interested in it. And I'm interested in it because I was a red diaper baby. People think of my mother as the atheist firebrand, but in reality, she was a dedicated Marxist who attempted to defect to the Soviet Union in 1960. And it was actually through that defection and that didn't work and her forced return to the United States that she accidentally discovered the prayer in school and filed the lawsuit. Now, she also wanted the Pledge of Allegiance out of the school.
Right.
She wanted any references to capitalism out of the school. She wanted the Constitution out of the school. You know, as she made money being an atheist, those attitudes changed somewhat.
Right.
But the reality was I was raised in a Marxist home and understood Marxism better than probably a lot of young people my age being raised in the Soviet Union at the time.
Yeah. What's the defining characteristic in your mind that when you say it's sort of the sine qua non, the thing that you have to have for it to be Marxist socialism? What is that one thing?
Well, number one, you have to have central planning because God's plan is free enterprise. God's plan, I work hard, I produce something, and primitively, I trade that to other people for what they need.
Right.
Today, we use money as an intermediary on that, but that was God's plan. It's in the Bible. It's clear in the Old Testament. This was God's plan for mankind, and it's mentioned in the New Testament as well. But in the socialist model, somebody not only decides what you're going to produce and when you're going to produce it, but also decides what you need. The key phrase, and Karl Marx used it, was from each according to their ability, to each according to their need.
Mm-hmm.
Keep in mind, it doesn't say want. Bernie Sanders isn't saying, I'm going to give you what you want. He's saying, I'm going to give you the health care that you need. Mm-hmm. I'm going to give you the education that you need. Is everybody going to get a five-star college education at the University of Virginia or at the University of California? Of course not. The government is going to decide who gets the free education and what level of education they're going to get, if at all.
Wrapped up in this whole notion of socialism and its Marxist cousin communism is this utopian ideal. Tell us a little bit about where did that originate and how does that work itself out today?
Well, we've seen other aspects of it that people don't immediately think of as utopianism. Germany's Hitler's Germany. was a utopian state. He was attempting to build a 1,000-year Reich that was going to be perfect for the German people. All he had to do was to steal from the Jews in order to finance it, take over the industries, you know, et cetera. You had Mussolini, the same thing. These, the fascism, this is just another aspect of utopianism. And by the way, please, everybody should keep in mind that the true name of the Nazi Party was the National Socialist Party. Then we saw this again. We saw it in France. We saw it in ancient China. We saw it with the Pilgrims. People forget that when the Pilgrims came to the United States, they tried this first. They thought that they could form a New Testament type of government, that they were going to be sharing. There was no private property. Right. Everybody would just work as hard as they could and only take what they needed. That was before Karl Marx. They starved to death that it had to go back to a free enterprise system. Not too many historians that are all about America and how great America is want to kind of report that angle of it. It didn't work in China when it was tried. And you go back to Sparta. Sparta failed. And the plan that came out, even Plato in his Republic and later the Laws admitted, yes, this would be the perfect system, but it probably won't work.
What about the atheistic character? It's a characteristic of socialism. It's not just atheistic. It's antagonistically atheistic, yes?
It is first of all, it's anti-religious, but it's particularly in its Western framework anti-Christian, because Christ gave us freedom of the individual. We have freedom of the individual that came through Christ. Our rights come from God. Well, this is a problem when you're dealing with central planning and you need to control the people and you need to tell them, you know, not only what their needs are, but what they're going to do. So the concept of God, the concept of having any authority higher than government, mm-hmm. has to be eliminated, particularly Judeo-Christianity.
Yeah. Some recent polls of so-called millennials, 30 and under generally, show about 35% of them prefer socialism to capitalism. You've said that socialism, true socialism, full-orbed socialism, wherever it's tried, always fails. Wouldn't confronting a young person with the evidence, the empirical evidence of those failures, be at least persuasive in helping them see there's more to socialism than they may understand when all they hear are the fine-sounding ideas?
No.
No?
Because they're in a state of magic thought, just like my mother was. They're sort of like the people that believe that nobody ever walked on the moon, that there was a giant conspiracy.
Right.
You know, that somehow some group, some organization, some unknown behind-the-scenes thing has managed to force socialism or collectivism or whatever you want to call it to fail. And if only if it were done right, or the people that tried it didn't do it right. And if only if it were done right. And you take a look at the failed French Revolution, and Karl Marx says, well, I got this figured out. I know how we can make this work. And they tried it in the Soviet Union, and of course it didn't work. And then the Cubans looked at it and wasn't working in Russia. They said, oh, no problem. We can make it work here. And the Chinese looked at it and said, hey, I mean, we're talking entire societies now, not young millennials. We're talking entire societies. Watch something else failing. And they tried it anyway. Then Pol Pot came along, and he looked at the whole thing. And he said, look, this isn't worked anywhere. Everybody is starving anywhere. I have the solution. The mistake that they made is that they didn't go far enough down. They kept people around that were educated and that were corrupted with ideas of free trade and capitalism. And all we need to do is get rid of those. So he murdered everybody with a college education. He murdered everybody that wore glasses, everybody that wore any kind of a college degree, everybody that spoke a foreign language, anybody that had ever been a police officer, anybody that had ever been an army officer. He murdered a third of the population, thinking that if he reduced it to the core proletariat, they could build this marvelous society.
I read someone say recently that if young people realize that Amazon would be owned by the government, Uber would be owned by the government, Google, Facebook, all the things that they idolize in the culture today, in a true socialist system, the means of production is all owned by collectively, that if they realize that they wouldn't like it, but there's something else that would be missing altogether.
Yes, Google would be missing.
Exactly.
Uber would be missing. What young folks don't understand is the accumulation of wealth is extremely important because innovation comes from the accumulation of wealth. And they, oh, well, that's nonsense. Is it nonsense? Remember that first cell phone that was like a brick?
Sure.
A lot of young people don't remember that. I mean, and all it was a telephone, and you could defend yourself with it. In fact, the Motorola who made it ran commercials of it, somebody picking it up burnt out of a fire, and it still worked. But here's the point. When that phone came out, it cost almost $1,000. It was just literally nothing more than a telephone. But there were people that were able to buy it because they wanted it and needed it, because they saw the productivity advantages of it. And that gave the people that manufactured that phone money so that they could innovate and produce more phones, cheaper phones, smaller phones, until we have what we have today.
Well, Bill, thank you for joining us so much. It's been great having you here.
Great, Beyond.
Good pleasure. Pleasure. Despite the abundant empirical evidence of the dangers of socialism, it persists. Part of what has helped it thrive, especially in the Southern Hemisphere, is the mistaken notion that socialism is taught in the Bible. But as Dr. D. James Kennedy explains, it's simply not true. All the principles of the Bible point away from state-instituted, state-mandated socialism.
Let us answer the question, does the Bible teach socialism? Now, whenever you hear people make that claim, they invariably will appeal to one passage, and that is the passage from Acts, the 4th and 5th chapter, dealing with Ananias and Barnabas. Barnabas, you recall, sold a piece of land and brought and gave it to the apostles, and then Ananias and his wife sold a piece of land, emulating them, but kept back part of the price and brought only a portion of it and lied about it. But they say that this passage contains within it all of the basic principles of socialism. Well, I would like to submit to you as a thesis this morning that not only does this passage not teach the principles of socialism, but that it countermands all of the various tenets, the basic fundamental tenets of socialism, and is an unparalleled broadside against the socialist ship of state. I do not see how one could have a more explicit repudiation of socialism than that is found in this very passage. So we will go right to the citadel of that passage which the proponents of socialism claim to have found in the Bible, which teaches socialism, to see if indeed it does, or if it teaches, as I propose, the very opposite of socialism, its antithesis. Well, the basic concept of socialism is either that the state owns or controls property or the means of production. That is, its socialism basically denies the concept of private property. Well, what does the Bible say? In the Decalogue alone, the Ten Commandments, I think we have the repudiation of this, the commandment, thou shalt not steal. As virtually every theologian for 20 centuries has declared, is a divine guarantee of private property. I cannot steal something from you if you do not own it. Furthermore, in the Decalogue, we even have a command that thou shalt not covet thy neighbor's house or anything that is thy neighbor's. Again, a clear teaching of private property. But let's come to this passage that we have before us. Is private property repudiated, or is it taught? Notice what Peter said to Ananias. While this property remained, this land remained, was it not thine own? It is difficult for me to imagine any clearer statement of the ownership of property than that. while it remained, before you sold it, was it not your own? Did you not own it? Could you not do with it whatever you will? And even after you sold it, was not the money your own? So we see that the Bible clearly teaches the right of private property, because God has given the whole world unto mankind as a stewardship, which is his to use and for which he is responsible to God. Secondly, we note that this action was voluntary. They didn't have to sell their property. There was no commandment to sell their property. There was no commandment to give the funds away. It was voluntarism. Now, I cannot imagine anything that militates more strongly against modern concepts of socialism than voluntarism. I have not the slightest objection to any group of people anywhere who want to get together and voluntarily engage in any form of socialism that they care to do. It is the fact of enforcement. It is the fact of coercion that lies at the very heart of every socialistic scheme in modern centuries. Thirdly, and I don't know which of these principles indeed militates more mightily against modern concepts of socialism. The money, they sold the property, and they brought the money, and they laid it at the feet of Pontius Pilate. Is that correct? They laid it at the feet of Caesar. Is that correct? They brought it to the local tax collector. No, what does it say? It says it a number of times. They laid it at the apostles' feet. Now, I can think of nothing more perfectly designed to give Karl Marx apoplexy than the idea that people should sell all of their property and bring the money and give it to the church. If there is anything which is antithetical to the whole spirit of modern socialism, it is precisely that. And yet people have the incredible temerity to say that this passage teaches modern state socialism. Nothing indeed could be farther from the truth than that. No, the Bible does not teach socialism, and the adverse effects of it and the long haul are incalculable. What the Bible teaches is freedom and responsibility and work. And we are jettisoning all of these in the socialistic state. And the spiritual effects will be the worst in the end.
Socialism results in many adverse effects. It harms families, churches, individuals, especially those on the receiving end of government redistribution. Attempts to claim that the Bible advocates any form of socialism clearly fall apart under closer scrutiny. What happens when good intentions to help the down and out go astray? Well, our own Jerry Newcomb takes a closer look.
Is poverty on the rise in America? In 2000, the nation spent $20 billion for welfare transfer payments. By 2014, that number had quadrupled to $83 billion. Now, nearly one out of six Americans are receiving food stamps. So, is genuine poverty rising at an alarming rate? Or are more people simply taking advantage of easy-to-get freebies? The Heritage Foundation reported recently on a groundbreaking welfare reform in the state of Maine, signed into law by Governor Paul LePage.
Governor LePage is a very down-to-earth, matter-of-fact Mainer. And he thinks able-bodied people who can work should work. And I think he and his team, and he's got some outstanding people working for him, just made this policy a reality. And sometimes that doesn't go over well with people who are able-bodied and don't want to work, even though they can. But It was successful in Maine.
As of 2014, Maine requires that those receiving welfare who are able-bodied adults without dependents either get a job or enroll in job retraining or even just volunteer some time. Do any of those things, and you can keep your food stamp benefits. And what happened in the first 3 months when these very minimal requirements went into effect? Requests to continue food stamp benefits from able-bodied adults without dependent children plummeted by 80%.
And sometimes people who are wrongly on the rolls will simply say, well, I guess it's time for us to quit applying for benefits.
Instituting baseline requirements for welfare designed to get people working is biblical. While it's virtuous to help the truly needy, the Apostle Paul says in 2 Thessalonians, if anyone is not willing to work, let him not eat. Creating needless dependency violates God's design for man and does harm.
Most liberal initiatives from the beginning of the war on poverty under Lyndon Johnson on were ostensibly created to help the poor. But because they have penalties against work and very strong penalties against marriage, in fact, they push the poor further into a hole. And that's why we can have spent over $16 trillion assisting poor people since the beginning of the war on poverty, but poverty has not gotten any better at all. And in fact, people's capacity for self-support has declined dramatically because these government programs destroy the heart of self-sufficiency.
All able-bodied Americans who want to work should be able to find jobs. And they should take those jobs. And if they take those jobs and they're at the bottom rung of the ladder, guess what? America is the land of opportunity. They can move up.
The Heritage Study notes that if what they did in Maine were to be applied in the other 49 states, it would save taxpayers about $10 billion a year. Nonetheless, critics of welfare reform may wonder if it somehow deviates from the Christian ethic.
I don't think that there's anywhere in the Bible that it talks about socialism being a better form of government. There is reference in the Bible that we should care for the poor, but that's us, you and me. We should make decisions in our own communities to care for the people around us that are less fortunate. Now, when Ronald Reagan was president, he talked about the need for the nation to have a safety net for those who could not take care of themselves. And that's an important consideration. But we should never confuse government's role with what the Bible says is our role, and that's to love our neighbors as ourselves and to take care of our brothers.
As you've seen on this program, socialism is a dangerous ideology that harms people and contradicts the Bible, and yet it seems to persist, even sometimes under the banner of Christianity. And millions of young people are buying into it. That's why it's more important than ever for people to understand the truth about socialism. We have two resources that will help you understand it and share it with others. My very dear friend Jennifer Kennedy Cassidy is here to tell us more. Jennifer, welcome.
Thank you, Frank. How could it be that socialism is gaining a foothold among America's young people? That a major party candidate could declare himself a socialist and win delegates? It can only happen because of ignorance. Ignorance of history and of the biblical teaching. A recent survey showed that many Americans under age 30 preferred socialism to capitalism. This should frighten all of us. That's why we want to offer you resources that will help you understand the truth about socialism and to share it with others. In a few weeks, we'll be airing a special program, The Problem of Socialism. And we want to send you a DVD of that program as our thanks for your generous donation to the ongoing work of this ministry. We need you to help us get the word out to the nation through our national television and radio platforms, as well as via the web and social media. Your generous donation will help us do just that. Simply write to us at Box 6085, Albert Lea, Minnesota, 56007. Or call toll-free 888-334-9762. Or go online to djameskennedy.org. We also want to share an easy-to-read book with you that summarizes the dangers of socialism and what you need to know about it better than anything I've seen. It's called 10 Truths About Socialism. And you'll not only want to read it for yourself, but you'll want to share it with your children and grandchildren. People under age 30 need this information more than anybody. So act now to make sure you get this book so you can put it into their hands. 10 Truths About Socialism. It explains how socialism's founding fathers rejected God, how socialism violates God's law, and how socialism goes hand in hand with tyranny. The book, 10 Truths About Socialism, is yours as our thanks for your generous donation. And you'll also want to get a DVD copy of our upcoming special, The Problem of Socialism. Simply write to us at Box 6085, Albert Lea, Minnesota, 56007. Or call toll-free, 888-334-9762. Or go online to djameskennedy.org.
You've often heard it said that the Bible is not a textbook on science, or perhaps the Bible's not a textbook on economics. Well, as Dr. D. James Kennedy once observed, when people say the Bible is not a textbook on one subject or another, you may rest assured that what they are really saying is they reject the broad principles that the Bible lays down on a particular discipline. Indeed, the Bible is not a textbook on economics. But in it, God teaches us His will and His precepts. And the clear sweep of the Bible's teaching proves socialism to be theft and idolatry, cloaked in the guise of charity and benevolence. Socialism teaches that it's proper to covet another man's belongings and demand that some of them be given to you. Socialism teaches that the job of the state is to forcibly take from those with means to give to those with lesser means. In stark contrast, the Bible teaches that theft and coveting are deeply sinful, and that the government's legitimate role is one of protection rather than idolatrous provision and redistribution. Sadly, a generation raised to feel entitled sees nothing wrong with demanding other people's belongings. You can certainly blame our current political system for such attitudes, but you can't blame them on the Bible. The Bible is not a textbook on economics, but it has plenty to say about it. And what it says reveals that socialism is flawed, deceptive, and wrong. I'm Frank Wright. Thanks for joining us this week on Truths That Transform. We'll see you next time.
Next week on Truths That Transform.
Socialism is alive, though not well, in America.
If we continue to do what Detroit did for 40 years, give people things they didn't work for, give them social programs, we can expect this to happen all over America.
That's next week. Today's program is available on DVD for your gift to this ministry of any amount. Please call, write, or log on to our website today. This has been a production of D. James Kennedy Ministries.